Good morning. Reading the news this week, there are a couple of things that stood out to me. One was I spent a lot of time in Western North Carolina near Asheville. And in fact, Becky and I spent some time last summer there, and the town we were staying in is gone. The last report I have, there's 7,000 roads and bridges gone. We have a friend that lives out in that area, and he is going and helping them feed horses and mules because that's how they're using to get water and food to people in some of the really isolated areas. And just reading about the resilience, and it's not a surprise if you know that area, and hearing about how people are just facing it and coping with it together. And then the number of people, they only lost 4 of the 80 voting stations, and they're filled. People are still exercising their right, which I think is a smart thing to do as a citizen. It's the right thing to do. You don't hear any whining out of that area. You hear a lot of people just going after it. That was very encouraging. And then another thing I read really burst my bubble. There was a pastor that just admitted and has been arrested for lying. A few years back, there was an institution he was part of. There had been some sexual abuse claims, and he lied to cover it up because that would be better for the kingdom, wouldn't it? Sometimes we do wrong things thinking it's better if we do this. And it just adds to a bad reputation for my particular career field. Pastors right now have the lowest rating as far as public approval since I've been around. And unfortunately, a lot of it, I think, is earned. So I get it. You know, it'd be easy thinking stuff like that and just saying, well, maybe you just need to be more quiet about stuff. Just kind of go along to get along. And that's not what we were called to do. Whether you're a pastor or whatever you do, followers of Jesus, we have work to do. And we ought to be about it. And we ought to be about it not grudgingly, but deliberately and with a sense of purpose. So what we're going to be looking at today should remind us of that. In this series, we've looked at several things that are really important for those of us that have accepted Christ. The moment you become a Christian, you're now a citizen of a new kingdom. That's our primary responsibility. Now, wherever we live, we ought to be, secondarily, we ought to be good citizens of that country or area we live in, of course. But we should never forget that our primary allegiance is to Jesus and his kingdom. And we have some instructions to live by. I'm going to give a couple of them here. One of these, we've looked at this before, it says, so be careful how you live. This is written to followers of Christ. Don't live like fools, but like those who are wise. It means we have a choice. I can act foolishly or I can act wisely. Make the most of every opportunity in these evil days. Don't act thoughtlessly, but understand what the Lord wants you to do. If I've accepted Jesus, I need to figure out what does God want me to do, not try to talk him into doing what I want done, but to figure out, God, what is it you're doing? What do you see? What do you want to see happen, and how can I be part of it and not holding back? So those of us that are followers of Jesus, there'll be some things like this today we'll be reminded of. And those of you that aren't, we have people that are dragged here because they won't get lunch or, you know, for whatever reason they're here watching online. And two things I'll ask you to do. One is I hope you'll hear why you may have a negative impression about the Christian faith or followers of Christ. I hope you'll hear some things that God has instructed us to do and get a right impression, at least of what God's intent is. The second thing is, check us out. And when we blow it, let us know. We have work to do, and we can't do that blindly. So if you see some of us that are out of line, you have permission, starting with me, point it out. Because we follow Jesus, followers of Christ should be known less for our political views and more for our humility and our hope and our love for God and others. I'm going to repeat that. We should be known less for our political views. It doesn't mean we shouldn't have, doesn't mean we shouldn't be involved in the political process. Fortunately, we get to do that in our country. But we need to make sure that humility and hope and love for God and others are the primary things that we live out and that we're known by. Humility, it just means that I have a deep concern for God's interest and I'm going to treat others as if they're more important than I am. Well, that doesn't sound very American. I'm sorry. We're citizens of another kingdom, and we should be treating others the way Jesus told us to and the way he modeled. I'm going to treat others as if they're more important. I'm going to give them respect. Even if I don't agree with them, I can learn to disagree without being... I can't say that. I can learn to disagree without being disagreeable. That sounds weird, I know, but it's true. Hope. Followers of Jesus ought to have great hope. Knowing that Jesus can change a life that's surrendered to him. And because of that, he can also change, at times he can change even institutions too. Perfectly, that's not going to happen this side of heaven. And our hope is not just, well, one day I'll be with Jesus and that'll be... No, I get to live that hope now. That God actually can change things. You know, when all this was written, Rome was the superpower of the world. No one would believe Rome would ever be gone. Where is it now? And this small cult that they were trying to squeeze the life out of, the Christian faith has continued. There is reason to have hope. Not hope in the wrong places, but hope in a God that can work in the midst of where we are. And then this idea of love. We ought to be characterized by a love for God that shows up also in our love for our neighbor, and especially our neighbors we disagree with. If we do that well, we'll have a huge impact. And if we don't, if we lack any of these essentials, we lose the impact God wants us to have. And I'm going to tell you, we are not doing well. George Barna and his group, they're world-renowned researchers. He grew up working with Gallup, started his own business, and has just done a tremendous job, highly respected. They did a survey recently, and there's good news in the survey. 71% of Americans, this is all Americans, Christians, not Christians, whatever, they really like Jesus. 71% of Americans, yay Jesus. That's good. Do you know 70% of millennials have a high view of Jesus? And some of you are thinking, millennials, they don't know, where do they get right? I'm just telling you, this is what the survey shows. That's the good news. Here's the not good news. When they surveyed unbelievers, non-Christians, people that don't follow Jesus, only 47% of them have a favorable view of the local church around them, ones that they know of, ones that they hear of, ones that they've been able to interact with. Only 47%, so less than half. When they were asked why they don't embrace the Christian faith, the top reason was, well, they're hypocrites. They say one thing and do something else. Their book tells them this. Nah, they don't do that. They're also very judgmental. That's the impression that we are passing on. Among non-believers, only 15% expressed respect for the Christian faith. Now, I'm not saying that all that was based on accuracy, or I'm just saying that's our image. They interviewed Christians and they thought, oh, most people like us. They think we're doing a great job. We're something. You're something. But as far as their perception of us, is they're picking up something different. And this has been getting worse and worse. Regularly, the world sees us as intolerant, exclusive, and judgmental. Now, we need to look at that and say, is there some truth to this? Is there something we need to think about? Is there something that we need to be aware of? I think there is. Here's another passage that should be standard operating procedure for those of us that follow Jesus. Micah 6:8, he has shown you, O man, what is good, And what does the Lord require of you? Remember, we're citizens of His kingdom. This is what He requires of His citizens: to act justly, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with our God. We like the justice part as long as we're on the receiving end of the good part of it. I sue you and I win. Justice. But the idea of justice here, it means what is right and good, and advocating for that, even if it might cost me. For instance, that pastor that got caught lying, justice would have meant he told the truth. So justice means that I'm going to pursue what is right and good from God's perspective. And I'm also going to be thinking about the disadvantage to help them out because they need advocates. How many? I haven't seen a commercial yet on TV for the coming election that doesn't have something about it saying, well, what is in it for me? I ought to be thinking, what's going to be the best for others? Still finding what is true and right and all that. But am I thinking about others, or is it mostly about me first, and then if I have any extra? We're doing this coat drive here, and I walked through the house the other day, and I thought, I've got coats that I'm not wearing. I've got coats I haven't worn in a long time, but they're cool. I like them. What's wrong with me? Well, no, don't answer that because we don't have time, but it was just a self-centered thing. Oh, that's cool. I might wear it one day. Yeah, I probably won't, but I might. But there are other people that could really use a good coat. You see, it's just built into us to be self-centered. It's simple. So when we think of justice, sometimes it's just justice for me. And then love mercy. I like it when I get mercy too, when I've messed up. But am I loving mercy that I offer to people around me? Am I merciful? Am I gracious to others? God wants me to. And then this idea of walking humbly with God, just like Jesus did. This is what we've been called to do and how to live. So far we've been in this series, we've been looking at what happens when humility and hope and a love for God and others is deficient in some areas. The first week, we looked at these categories. I got these from this book called The After Party, which is a great resource. It kind of helped come up with a grid about this. So we've got a lot of people that have a lot of hope. Things can change, but it's not coupled with humility. These are the people that they're combatants. They're armed and ready to fight. If you don't agree, we're going to make change. And if you don't like it, tough. We'll just do without you or get rid of you. These are the people, because they lack humility, they don't mind calling someone that disagrees with them an idiot or stupid or worthless, that kind of thing. And just as a clue, that's a lack of humility. They get a lot done because they have hope that things can change and we need to go after it. And they're the ones that get a lot of followers and people listen to them because they've got good ideas and they've got the energy to go behind it. And hope is great, but when it's not coupled with humility, it can do a lot of harm. You see, we have to have both of these. Last week we looked at another group, and these are people that are generally pretty humble, but they lack hope. They're worn out. In fact, they fit into this category that they've been polling and realizing that the largest group in our country right now of voting age are the exhausted majority. They had some hope in 2016, some in 2020, and now, what difference does it make? The research has said that 32 million people that claim to be followers of Jesus plan not to vote in November. What's the use? Not going to make any difference. Just suck it up. That's not a good option for us. Humility is really valuable. Sadly, it's a precious resource. It almost seems extinct. But humility is what can help build relationships. It can build communities. But humility without hope doesn't get anything done. There's another category. This is a smaller category, but they have a large voice. And these are people that don't have humility or hope. They're just arrogant cynics. A cynic is someone that just distrusts is the guidance of their life, and they detach from others because they don't trust them. This is kind of where, for quite a while, this is where I lived. I've been around people, and people are a mess. They're needy. They just create all kind of, who needs it? I mean, and the cynic, if you really get to it, they kind of enjoy what's going on because it's almost like a sport for them. They can pick at everybody because they don't care. And they can attach themselves to any group if it's going to be a benefit to them, but they don't have any dog in the hunt. It's easy to critique from a distance when you don't care. It's easy to make fun of groups and stuff. But that's kind of where the cynic is. And I'm afraid this group is growing. And among followers of Jesus, I think it's becoming a bit more prevalent. And this particular group of Christians, they hold to a private faith, but it's not one that God endorses. God always wanted us to have personal trust in Him, make a personal decision to walk with Him and trust Him, but never was it meant to be private. We're called to live our lives honoring Him out loud. Matthew 28, Jesus gave these marching orders again for those of us that are citizens in His kingdom. I have been given all authority in heaven and on earth. Therefore, go and make disciples of all the nations. A disciple is just someone that's learning and growing in the faith. Nations just has to do with all people groups, not necessarily geographical. Do you know that? That means that need to be making disciples of, I can't believe it, but Republicans? Even Democrats? How about independents? All people. Jesus called us to be pursuing with humility and hope and love for God and them. True love for Jesus is going to lead you and me to take risks, just like He did for the sake of a bigger story. It means us being involved in what's going on in the world around us, and I think we ought to be the best citizens we can be. God's kingdom first, and then for us from the U.S. here. But never forgetting that there's a much bigger story than just what happens in November. Because the truth is, the election season now lasts 4 years. It's going to be 8 soon, but right now it's just 4. And there's a much bigger story going on that we need to be aware of and not be sidetracked from. Humility, hope, and love always involve risk. And so I want to tell a story today about Jesus that for the longest time I just didn't understand it. There were things that didn't make sense to me. The context of this story is it's near the end of Jesus' public ministry. Soon his enemies are going to think they win the day by having him arrested and executed. He's gained a lot of popularity. Everywhere he goes, there are big crowds. He is showing up in the kind of an outskirts of Jerusalem. It's a town called Jericho. It was a huge center at that point. It was very wealthy. It was right there where the trade routes were. There was a lot that went on there. Huge crowds had found him there. And these crowds were enamored by Jesus and intrigued by him at the same time. His reputation was really growing. And in the crowd, you can imagine, I mean, I've never been to a Taylor Swift concert, but I imagine it was similar there. Some people come because they're Swifties. Nothing could be better than Taylor Swift. If she burps, that's a new song that's going to make millions. Some people are coming for other reasons. But anyway, in Jesus' case, you have these huge crowds, and some of them came because it's the first time they'd ever heard anybody speak and teach in a way that made sense to them. They were used to the religious kind of elitists that always spoke in ways that made people feel stupid, like they might use the word loquacious. So you had people, they just loved, Jesus seemed so real, you could connect with him. You had some people that were very curious. They'd heard about him, and they had friends talk about him. They couldn't wait. I want to find, what's going on here? What is really, what's about this guy? Yet some that had heard that he could heal those that were sick. And so they came, they were ill, or they brought family and friends that were struggling. They were just hoping it maybe there's some way we could get near him, or he might see them or touch them or heal them. There's another group, and this group had been growing. And they were hoping, you know, this guy could change the world. We ought to make him king. You know, the week before Jesus was executed, people were trying to get him to become king. They were hoping, if he'll take over the political reins, we'll follow him and maybe we can take over Rome. Because we trust this guy and we see what he's able to do, and we want Rome gone. We don't like them occupying our nation. We don't like being under their thumb. And if Jesus comes, we'll follow him and we'll take him out. And then there were still others that hated him and feared him. And they were coming, they were looking to gather ammunition. We think we invented this kind of gotcha politics. It's been going on for a long time. They were hoping that they could catch Jesus saying or doing something that they could use against him to discredit him or to take him before the authorities and have him arrested and hopefully killed. That was their political strategy. They want to get him. So you got this huge crowd with all kind of a mixture of things that are going on, their own agendas. So now I'm going to read to you what happens. Jesus entered Jericho and made his way through the town. There was a man there named Zacchaeus. He was the chief tax collector in the region, and he had become very rich. He tried to get a look at Jesus, but he was too short to see over the crowd. Every time I read that, I think of Danny DeVito. All he could see was the fannies of people in front of him. So what does he do? So he ran ahead and climbed a sycamore fig tree beside the roads, for Jesus was going to pass that way. He climbs up there, he's got a Subway sandwich, hoping he gets a good view of Jesus. Danny DeVito was not a tax collector. I don't even know the guy, so I'm kind of making fun of him, but I think he's a wonderful spokesperson for Subway. When Jesus came by, he looked up at Zacchaeus and called him by name. Zacchaeus, he said, quick, come down. I must be a guest in your home today. Zacchaeus quickly climbed down and took Jesus to his house in great excitement and joy. But the people were displeased. He has gone to be the guest of a notorious sinner, they grumbled. Meanwhile, Zacchaeus stood before the Lord and said, I will give half my wealth to the poor, Lord, if I have cheated any people on their taxes. I will give them back four times as much. Jesus responded, salvation has come to this home today, for this man has shown himself to be a true son of Abraham. For the Son of Man came to seek and to save those who were lost. Why did Jesus do this? Zacchaeus was despicable. He wasn't just a tax collector. He was the chief of them. He was like a mafia boss. The way they did their, they would work with Rome to come up with a quota, and they could collect anything they wanted beyond that. And they were known as, they were notorious swindlers, cheaters, they strong-armed people. Nobody liked them because they were untouchable, because as long as Rome got their cut, they didn't care what these people did. So they were above the law. Think of someone you can't stand, some group you can't stand, and that's the way they saw Zacchaeus. I still don't understand. But the thing is, Jesus never did anything without a deliberate purpose behind it. He was fully human, but he was also fully God. Everything he did was deliberate. He never made mistakes. Can you imagine if he'd run this idea by his disciples? Hey, guys, we're going in Jericho, and Zacchaeus is going to be there. And I really want to spend some time with him. What do you all think? And they would have said, no way. It's like the worst thing you could do. And they would talk to him, and they'd finally say, look, Jesus, you're a good guy. We know you have a big heart, but that's just naive. Your enemies are going to use that against you. if you just have to see Zacchaeus, look, we'll get word to him secretly. You can meet him late at night when no one will know. That way you can care about the guy, but the last thing you want to do is make this public, because that's going to come back and bite. The optics would be horrible. If people see you with this guy, they're going to think either you're stupid, you don't know anything about human nature, you're just a buffoon, or they're going to think that you're sucking up to him because he's wealthy and he could fund your ministry for the next year. Don't do it. Stay away from this guy. But Jesus didn't do a poll or an opinion survey. He deliberately and publicly sought Zacchaeus out. And the question is, why? Why take the risk? He's so close to Jerusalem and there's all these enemies. Why would you take a risk like that? And the only thing I can come up with is he wanted us to know why he came. He didn't come to fund a ministry. He didn't come to build a brand. His purpose and his mission was to seek and to save the lost. And he did it in Jesus style. He calls down Zacchaeus. He doesn't say, would it be okay if I come to your house? He goes, no, I must come to your house today. And he goes. Zacchaeus is thrilled. Why do you think he was thrilled? Only thing I can think of is that all the wealth and all the stuff that he had, all the political power that he had, he'd achieved it, but it didn't do what he thought it would do. I've known some very wealthy people before. And most of us would say, man, if I had what they did. But they did. And there was still this hole in them. There was still something missing. We weren't created to be fulfilled by stuff or power. Zacchaeus, something had happened. We don't know what it was, but he recognized there's something missing in me. There's something broken in me. And Jesus sees me. And the evidence of his repentance was that he said, if I've cheated anyone, it's not if. I mean, he was kind of hedging his bets right there. He had. That's what he did for a living. But he publicly said, I will repay him. Over and over again, I'll repay him. So I'm going to put my pastor hat on for a minute. And if you get irritated with me, please, you're welcome to talk to me later, but I'm concerned with what I see in our country today among those who claim to follow Jesus. I'm concerned about my own self. There are some times I can get really judgmental about people that I think are making foolish choices or supporting things that don't make sense, that are so out of line biblically. But if I'm really honest about it, and I hope I can be, is that why should I expect people that don't follow Jesus to act like they do? That doesn't change that things are true and good and right. It just means, but why should I put a standard on someone that doesn't know him when I'm not even willing to necessarily look at myself? I can be very judgmental. That's wrong. When I'm condemning, when I write someone off, and I would never say it out loud, but in my thought bubble, what an idiot. And God reads our thought bubbles, so he gets it. I remember, none of you knew me, my sister did. But before I was a follower of Jesus, I wasn't any good. I wasn't like Zacchaeus, but I did steal. I knew how to break into cars and steal. I knew how to break into houses. I loved doing that. It was cool. It was kind of risky, and it was fun. I loved to cheat. I would have never been out of school if I hadn't cheated. I loved to lie. I loved to lie even when I didn't need to, because I enjoyed having I've enjoyed fooling somebody into thinking something, and I felt like I had some power. Huh, I got him to believe that. Yay me. I didn't have any conscience about that stuff. And if Jesus treated me like sometimes I think about others, I would have had no chance. I've been a Christian for a while. And Becky and I both felt like God wanted us to start a church. I'm still trying to figure out what in the world were we thinking. But we started thinking about large metropolitan areas. Prior to that, I just wanted to live in the mountains by myself. And if Becky wanted to come, that'd be great. I'm not making any of this up. To me, living in the mountains by myself with the birds and the squirrels, chipmunks, raccoons, whatever. I'm an introvert anyway, but people are messy. And I just thought, and then I become a Christian, and I'm thinking, well, maybe a retreat center in the mountains. You could bring people in occasionally and kind of get credit for that. But the rest of the time, they're, you know. But as time went on, God was changing my values and my heart in it. And so we started looking for a place to plant a church, and one of the areas was D.C. And I remember talking to a few people and asking them to pray about it. We were thinking about coming up to this area. And I heard from several Christians and then pastors. This is what they said. And it was universal what I was hearing. Why would you go there? Don't you realize it's terrible traffic, it's super expensive, and the people aren't very nice? All of that's kind of true. And the thinking is, well, of course you should stay away from a place like that. But what would Jesus do? You write places off because they're busy, expensive, and people aren't so nice? No, our mentality, we get caught up into things, and because we believe it strongly, we think, well, surely God's behind this. Romans 5:8, but God showed his great love for us, you and me, by sending Christ to die for us. While we were still sinners. I don't have much trouble remembering my days before knowing Jesus. I've got very vivid memories. Some of them reinforced because not long after I accepted Christ, I had someone that challenged me and said, maybe you should go make restitution. I'm going to tell you, restitution is a miserable thing to do. I had to go and ask people's forgiveness for lying to them and deceiving them. I had to go to places that I had stolen. People that thought I was their friend, they didn't realize I was ripping them off consistently, and to go and make restitution. I had to go back to the college I was in my first year. I had gotten everybody in trouble in my dorm because of property I destroyed, and I had to go back and admit that to the dean and make restitution. I'm grateful. But man, Jesus still loved me. All of us, like sheep, it says, have gone astray or have strayed away. We have left God's path to follow our own. If you do not remember when you were far from him or when you had gone your own way and you claim to be a follower of Jesus now, you've got homework to do. Because if we're not careful, we start thinking, oh, I'm really pretty good. I'm a whole lot better than, and we can list all kind of people that we're better than. Shame on us. If Jesus didn't forgive us, we would be lost. And I think sometimes it's just easy to forget just where we were and just what he did for us. And that recognition of his sacrifice so that we could be forgiven and have a relationship with him. We need to keep that in our minds. And it's what causes us to grab hold of humility, because we didn't get what we deserved. We got God's kindness and his mercy. And that should lead me to be humble, because I'm not better than anybody on this planet. And you aren't either. And if you start thinking you are, we're in big, big trouble. But we ought to also have not just humility, but we ought to have hope, because if God can take my life and yours and begin changing it, accepting us where we are and changing it, that means he could do that for anybody. No one saw what was going on in Zacchaeus except Jesus. You don't know what's going on in your neighbor that you hate, or that family member that you just can't wait to not be around Thanksgiving, or that coworker. You don't know how God might be. Does it mean that something definitely is going to happen? We don't know. But our hope is that God can work, and he wants to. And our love for God should be fueled primarily by just utter gratitude that he loves me. I'm not earning anything. He loves me. And then my love for others is because that's what Jesus did. That's what he's called me to do. And even to love my enemies. And the truth is, most of us, we see anybody that doesn't think like we do. Not just opponents, but they're enemies. They should be taken out. Shame on us when we buy that. Because that's not what citizens of Jesus' kingdom do. We ought to be involved in our culture. We ought to look to make change as we can, and we ought to try to influence where wise decisions are made, but in a way that shows humility and hope and love. And you're thinking, well, that's impossible. No. It is very possible. And it's messy, and we may get beat up for it, but that's what we're called to do. We represent him. So the question I'll close with is this is so... How am I going to follow Jesus' example this week? What is it that he is saying to you? What is it he wants you to do? How to respond to some of these people or individuals that you just can't stand? You think they're the worst scum of the earth. How does Jesus see them? And what does he want you and I to do? How should we respond? Some of you need to go out, and if they still have any, buy some mission muffins and take it to some of those people you don't like. I'm not really joking. If God loves us and loved us when we were so far from him, we have the capacity to do that for others. You know, we can speak the truth in love without being... We can disagree without being utterly disagreeable. I don't see many models of it. The church should be a model of it. We've got work to do. Let's get after it. Let me pray. Father, in a lot of ways, we've made a mess of your reputation. We can do things and say things and have attitudes that, because of people around us, it seems normal and okay, but you look at that and you just say, what's going on? Where's your humility? Where's your hope? Where's your love for me and love for your neighbor? God, this week, help us to look in the mirror instead of just on a screen. What is it that you see that you want us to adjust and change? What do we need to hold on to when we have humility and hope and love? How do we hold on to that without sliding into something ugly and hateful? Please help us to hear your voice in the midst of all the voices around, and to be found faithfully following you. In Christ's name, amen.